The Ryan Reese Show from Southern California. This is The Ryan Reese Show. Post your questions using @RyanReese on his Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. Are you ready?
Ready. Okay, tonight, this Saturday night, we have a show for you. I've been waiting to get this girl on my show for months now. I don't even know how I contacted her. It was somewhere through, you know, actually someone told me about her. They said, hey, check this girl out. She just seems like you guys need to connect. And I stalked her a little bit on social media for a little bit. And then I don't even know how we actually really even connected. I can't remember because I meet so many people all the time. But I told her to send her testimony to me, and she ended up, she didn't even have it recorded at that point. She recorded it, she sent it to me, and my mouth dropped. And I'm like, dang it, I'm so surprised I never met her back in the day. We definitely would have ran in the same circles, and just the way she was explaining her story and the crowd and everything that she was around, a lot of similarities, but also just to see how God got a hold of her life. And I think it's going to be very inspiring for all you guys that are listening tonight. I have Jesse, actually via Zoom, but you know, you guys could hear her or you could even see her on the screen. But Jesse, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, what's going on? Thank you. Yeah, we have the same like circle of friends.
Yeah.
I think that's how we connected. It's
yes.
A God thing.
Yes.
I love your show. It's so cool to be on your show.
Hey, I'm excited to have you. I want like 3 hours. When I heard your testimony, I'm like, I need like 3 or 4 hours with her. I was so intrigued. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Okay. So check this out. Let's get into it because we only have an hour. Okay. So first of all, where in the heck did you grow up? Because, you know, obviously, you know, I'm looking at you and you got a lot of, you're covered in tattoos and you could tell you have a very colorful past. Where'd you grow up and how'd you, what was the lifestyle? Were you like religious when you grew up? What was your background?
So I was raised in Detroit. I love Detroit. Detroit's a great city. I don't know if you guys have been through Detroit with whosoever.
Not yet.
It's a great city. Yeah, you gotta go. Detroit. Straight out the gate, my family was like, it was like a family curse. Chaos, you know, lots of schizophrenia, close family members like murdered one another. There's like rape, you know,
All
sorts of, so it's like a family curse. It was, you know, kind of a hectic, we weren't the kind of family that gets together for Thanksgiving or even likes to be in the same room with each other. So
now
are you talking about your immediate family
or are you talking about like, even like your uncles and everybody in the family?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Immediate family and a little bit. Yeah. So There really wasn't like a family foundation.
Yeah.
So, but I did have a single mom and, she's a tough lady. So single mom and I had a sister and, my dad wasn't really around, classic story. And, growing up, like we were poor, you know, but Detroit was awesome. Like everybody played together. I was kind of the minority in school. It was cool. And then into my childhood, my sister developed leukemia, and that was really hard on my mom. So my mom was going to school full time, working full time, and taking care of my sister.
That
you know, so
tough.
I have so much love for single moms and single dads.
Yeah.
So yeah, she was doing that, and so I had a lot of time like by myself. And I really found therapy in music. So I would just go in the basement and I would like headbang and dance and, you know, all that kind of thing. So I really found therapy with music. So we lost my sister. She passed away when she was 9 and I was 8. And then a year later, my dad started coming around. He was a really cool guy. He was an artist, like starving artist. My mom and him both were kind of partiers too. So, he died of AIDS when I was 9.
So he came around when you were 8 and then he died by 9.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He found out he was dying and then he spent so much time with me. It was really cool. You know, it was cool. So I have some really good memories from like the last year of his life, and he passed. And at like 9 years old, I was just like, where do people go when they die? It really started getting me thinking kind of spiritually, like what happens? Where do they go? You know, will I see them again? What does that mean? And those kind of got my wheels turning.
Those are good questions for, there's actually a lot of people that actually think those questions, and you didn't even grow up really religious or anything like that. And these are those questions. Like,
no, not at all.
Am I going to see people again? Whatever happens to us after I die. So where'd you go for those answers, or were they more just like you're thinking about it?
Just thinking about, like, contemplating, like, what life was and what we're here for. I remember just, like, thinking about that when I was 9. Like, well, and then, so kind of to cope, I just became, like, I guess a bit of a perfectionist. I, like, threw myself into school. I was real nerdy, super shy. I'm still pretty nerdy and shy. And I loved, like, cheerleading. I was, like, competitive cheerleader, super goofy. And then I found this after-school Christian group. And I had this Christian leader, and he was like, you guys will, in your generation, you'll see the second coming of Jesus. Like, I just know, he was so deep, and, like, his eyes were, like, I just remember there was fire in his eyes. He was on fire for Christ.
You're like, that really dang! Spoke into me.
Yeah. Oh, man. And don't you feel like sometimes we're kind of, like, walking through it? You know, I think you might be right. So, anyway, he was, like, on fire for Jesus. Unapologetically, and that always kind of stuck with me. So that was junior high, and that kind of just planted the seed. Super nerdy, kind of got bullied, and super shy, like painfully shy. And anyway, later on, my mom, to cope with everything too, she went through like a lot of trauma, a lot of pain.
Totally.
God bless her, like tough lady. She like started drinking heavily and all that stuff, and she started just seeing like the wrong kind of guys, the wrong kind of men. And she found this man who was an ex-cop, like real tall cowboy dude. And he was so angry. And it's funny to talk about him now because I really tried to practice forgiveness and, you know, letting go.
Yeah.
But just to explain kind of like what that was like, he was so intense and so angry. And like every day he would just call me names. Tell me I'd not amount to anything. And
verbally
abusive. It was a bummer. It was just kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just really spun me out. And my mom was just kind of like joining him in that. And like, I love her so much too. So it's funny. But that really changed me because I didn't know like what to do with that and how to process that. I started to kind of lose my faith. Because it was just constantly, like, talked down to and sort of just, like, death spoken over me. And I was just bummed.
Yeah.
Just made me really bummed out. I lost kind of that motivation and that focus on Jesus and school and sports. I was just like, oh, man. I started to develop, Lady Gaga calls it, like, a fame monster. Mm-hmm. So I started to develop this sort of, like an envy for celebrities and looking at, like I grew up listening to Michael Jackson and stuff. And I was like, all right, well, if someone calls you a loser and that you won't amount to anything, like what would be the best case scenario to prove them wrong? Be a celebrity.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, what is the formula to be a celebrity? So I just started like really thinking about that and like wanting to walk towards being famous somehow. I'm like, all right, I'm not an actor. I'm not a singer. What am I going to do? So anyway, I was in dance team and really focused on dance and wanted to explore like show business and that kind of thing. And anyway, but I was super depressed.
You're still in high school at this point, or are you out now?
High school.
Okay.
High school. Yeah. Yeah. And so he was still around. He really, every day was just terrible to go home. It was just like, just toxic. It was really rough. And I would try to run away, but they would like report me as a runaway. He would call the cops on me for like random things. So I got put on a tether, dropped off at juvie, like a mental home. It was just like in a matter of 2 years, I went from like all A's to, I ended up getting expelled because I just couldn't put my mind into school anymore.
Yeah.
It just mess. So that really spun me up. And,
so at this point, so now, yeah. So now you're at juvie. You went to a mental home. You're out of school at this point. Like, what are you thinking now? Like, what are you going to do with your life since everything has completely switched from being this good little girl, going to school, going to church on campus, and having a relationship with God? It's everything's completely distorted from all the abuse and everything.
I had just planned to, I wanted to move to New York City or, you know, get into art, performance, that kind of stuff. So I was really driven, and I practiced dance still like every day. I was like, really like training in that and kind of focused on that. And I was just like, in my mind, I was kind of like, well, I don't really need school anyway to, you know, like audition for things and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, and I was just being real goofy. Like, I went from being real shy to showing up at school just being super goofy. I just wanted, like, some kind of attention, like, someone to just, I don't know. So, I just make people laugh, just super goofy stuff, like, going down the hall in, like, garbage cans and just goofy stuff, you know? And they just thought I was just being too silly, so I got expelled. And actually had pretty good grades at the time, so I was like, whoa. You know, that's pretty final. That just, and I literally was begging them, like, can I go to prom? I want to go to prom. I went every prom, like, in the community, like, in the surrounding cities. Like, you gotta let me go to prom. So they said, okay. But I was expelled. And And then I started working full time. I had all these, like, random jobs. I was, like, a Quiznos cop. When I was telling you, I love being a mascot. I was, like, this Quiznos cop.
Oh, you
and
were?
I would, yeah.
Well, that job's still open for you on tour.
Yeah, I love being a mascot. I love it. I had all these random jobs, and I was finally old enough to legally move out of the house. So I did. And I lived in a trailer with, like, a bunch of people, and I was so broke, and it was so hard to get a car, flip phone.
Yeah.
Pay for rent, pay for food. But anyway, I was like doing all these jobs. I was working a ton. And I answered this ad in the paper that was like Dancers Wanted. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm a dancer. Let's dance. And I called and they're like, oh, it's not that kind of dance. It was a strip club. And so they're like, come on in and audition. And so I brought two of my girlfriends with me. And we watched this girl on stage just get rained on, like, just money, you know?
Right.
And my girlfriends are like, you could do this, you know? Why don't you just try it for a night, see how it goes, and if you don't like it, you know? I was like, all right, let's try it for a night. And so my first night, I think I made, like, $200 and, like, nothing crazy, but I was like, yes! Yeah. I'm so rich! This is so good! So, I was, like, high on life with my $200, and...
I got a question for you. Was that something that you ever decided, like, you know what, I would never strip or I'll never put myself in this situation, or just never, like, dawned on you that you would even be doing something like that?
You know, the previous, like, the real me, the previous, before I had that sort of, like, stepdad and stuff, would have never. I was actually a virgin until I was 18.
Yeah.
And I found stripping at 19. So it was, like, just quickly ended up, like, in the wrong little circle.
It does. It quickly really escalates quickly. Sometimes.
Yeah.
So, oh, man. So here you are, you got no money and now you got rained on and now you got a bunch of cash. So now what are you thinking at this point? Like going into full-time stripping, or this is just going to be a way to get on my feet?
Yeah. So it pretty much helps me to get an apartment and that kind of thing. I could support myself. And so I guess I just saw that as an out. So I found, like, my stripper family, and we were all close and, you know, like, best friends and everything. And I guess if you don't have, like, a strong family, when you find that, like, some sort of community somewhere, and just, like, attention for men and stuff like that really started to fill, like, a void. And I think that's kind of a classic story with a lot of women is, like, if you don't have that strong father figure at home, like, you tend to go to certain avenues to replace that with, whether it's attention from men or sort of, like, an empowerment with your sexuality and that kind of thing. So,
what were the situations or what were the events that happened that there was, like, a turn of events of your platform, basically, I guess you would say your platform started growing?
So I guess, I've been doing that whole thing, and then I went to Burning Man.
Oh boy, what year was this?
My first Burning Man.
Oh, was the first one?
This was, oh gosh, I don't know, maybe 2006.
2006.
I started, you know, getting into like the rave scene and all that, and then went to my first Burning Man. And so Burning Man is a wild party. It's crazy. But also there's a lot of people that are like on their game, you know, so you have like all the lead, you know, CEOs of the world and people that are really on their game. And I was like, oh man, I'm just like a stripper, you know, and I was sort of embarrassed to tell people I was a stripper. And so I was like, I gotta like do something with my life, right? So let's figure something out. Anyway, I started getting into personal training and health and that kind of thing. And I was like, all right, I'm ready to leave Detroit. I want to move to Vegas. So I packed my bags, I moved to Vegas, and I swore that I would never strip again and that I would just finally, like, go for my dreams, go for the goals, and, you know, like, audition for everything, get into show business.
Yeah.
So I went to Vegas, and right when I got there, I just started meeting as many people. I was on my hustle so hard. It was so insane. Like, I don't think I was just relentless about it. And, I had all of these goals and these dreams and things that I wanted to do. And it was so wild that, you know, if you just keep sticking to things and keep at it, like you can kind of start knocking stuff off. Like, you know, it kind of lines up and it works out. But I was really just motivated, it seems like quite self-centered when I look back, you know, it's like, it all revolves kind of around yourself a little bit when you're your brand, you know.
Yeah, always. Yes.
Yeah, so you like put yourself on pedestal. It's so wild. Like with modeling, and then I started doing like weekly shows. I did all sorts of stuff from like a magician's assistant to like reality TV. Toured with a bunch of electronic music festivals. I was like a fire performer.
Yeah,
Had like a lot of circus sideshow friends and got to really, I don't know, it was pretty wild. So that was like a whole,
okay,
wow.
So unpacking that, so you're now in Vegas and you're in the mix with all kinds of different scenes and different environments. Well, what's going on with you now? Do you think like at that point, because I would say that's pretty successful, like you filled that empty void, if you want to say that, with like, from being a stripper to actually a performer, you're your own brand. I mean, you're successful at this point, you know, in the world's eyes. Were you still empty? Were there thoughts of God? What was kind of going on in your head at this point? Or were you just more like mm-hmm. when I was in that situation, I was just like, whee, you know, just going right. crazy and girls and drugs and alcohol and just like, it just new sure stuff enough. Every night, just kind of lost in La La Land, you know, of all this,
yeah.
the light show, if you will. Not really thinking yeah. too much.
Yeah, just the dopamine life.
Like, yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
You're so caught up. So what were some scenarios? So you're in this mix, and you became even a suicide girl, correct?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. So that really kind of catapulted things.
Oh, okay.
You know? Yeah, so that's like a huge brand. And their fans are just crazy.
Tell the listeners a little bit about what a suicide girl is.
Oh, I feel so funny promoting them because I don't really want anybody to go and check them out. So just take my word for it. Like,
okay, I got it.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to actually check them out. But for the right, like, just... like fill you in for like educational purposes. Suicide Girls is like a Playboy for like tattooed models, and they have like millions of fans, and they have like a tour, world tour, and all that kind of stuff. So I went on the tours, and we would play these sold out shows. And I remember these walls. We played a lot of like House of Blues, and they were sold out. It was crazy, and we got to put our names like on the wall with all these different bands, like Kings of Leon and you know, like all the bands. And I remember we got to put our name on the board where we had sold out shows like with these mega bands. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy, you know? And I was like stage diving with like, oh, there's so many people. It was crazy. Just pouring alcohol on people. And I was like, this is my job. This is wild. So that was crazy. But that probably like catapulted, you know, sort of the, like the, I don't know, little sea monster kind of thing for a bit. And that was kind of cool. I did a bunch of really cheesy reality shows. That was pretty goofy. I got married on reality TV, but it like wasn't legal.
So you're, there's a lot of, obviously there's a lot of moving parts here in your life. And
it was wild.
You've reached a lot of your dreams, obviously, right? For stuff that you want to do, a lot of cool little like, interesting events that you're involved with. You're a Suicide Girl. That's in that whole scene. That's a pretty big deal at that point. But what was it? And because I mean, I think we have like 8 minutes before the end of the first half, and we still have the whole second half. We still got more time. But I just want to make sure you have enough time to tell everything. So what were the next things in your career that got you basically to the point to where you were like, okay, there's some things happening in my life where something doesn't feel right, or maybe God was trying to get your attention. Mm. What were those? We had plenty of time till the end of the break.
Yeah, sure. So I guess I started experimenting with drugs, and so there's acid and there's things, and, so after I kind of just went to the cycle where like the dreams came true, the things happened, you know, and I was like just repeating the same cycles. I got an offer to do shows like in the strip club again. And, so I'd be like a feature performer and you travel and all that. And it was a lot of money. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And so I did for 3 years. I toured and did, like strip clubs. So my life was just surrounded by strip club after strip club after strip club. And then I was getting offers for like porn, and I was thinking like, oh, that's going to kill me. And I just started to kind of dwell in that. I never did porn, but I started to just kind of walk closer to that. And that really started getting me to think of like, I'm going too far, you know, like no judgment on anybody.
Yeah.
But it really started to like hurt my heart. I started really feeling conviction because people, I even had friends that were, in prostitution, and it was low key. Like they don't tell people about it, but they're just like low key. And I just started to see like around me that things started to get darker, and like my connections weren't like real human connections. The way people treated me, it was more like surface encounter, and it just like being in clubs all the time. And then, you know, everything is kind of focused on myself, and that just started to feel so creepy.
Yeah.
I was like, this is weird, man. You know, I don't like it. Like I want to, that's not what life is about.
What's crazy is what you just said is like the way you kind of pulled away from the other performing, where it's more interaction with people, and then you end up in this club circuit or strip club circuit. Now you're an object basically. So they're just using you as an object to come in and perform and get naked or do whatever you're doing and then move on to the next thing, which that's crazy. That scene is real dark, huh? That whole.
Yeah. It gets messed up because really, I remember I had one person, like one manager yell at me because it was all nude and I didn't like doing all nude. And they yelled at me because I didn't take my bottoms off. I was like, they really like screamed at me. And then that was the point where I was like, oh man, that is really like not right. They screamed at me in front of people in the audience who were like, you didn't take your bottoms off. And I was like, that's so weird. Like, do you have a daughter? Would you say, like, what if someone said that to your daughter and he just like froze, you know? Like,
no way.
Oh man, this is so weird. Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy.
So they don't care about the show or the entertainment value necessarily. It was like more about just shaking your whatever, your bits. And I was like, oh.
Yep, exactly.
So now
you're getting offers to go to porn to the next level because sin always gets darker and darker and darker. And there was like this conviction. The Holy Spirit's kind of is convicting you to be like, okay, you know what? You're going to go. I mean, that's just another level. Yeah. It's just another level. It's not, we're not casting judgment on anyone, but it's just like you start by drinking some booze, then you start smoking some weed, then you start doing some cocaine, then you start doing some crack, heroin. It's like, it's just, there's different levels at the end of the day. Sin is sin.
Yeah.
But there's just different stages or levels. So
yeah, I was Buddhist at the time too. I was Buddhist at the time, so I really wasn't thinking a lot about Jesus, and I was Buddhist, and like in Buddhism, as long as you have like good intentions, you know, things are all right. So, yeah, at that point, it's just, I started to get real low. I started to like feel suicidal. I just started to feel like, wow, no one around me like deeply cares. And I just like, you know, like we don't kick it. I don't go to your house and like kick it and watch a movie with my girlfriends. Like we just party.
Yeah.
And like, it's just very surface level and everything. So I just started to feel super empty, super sad, and like just not fulfilled by any of it. And I would just be at like parties. And I remember being at these parties and I would go in the bathroom and just sort of sit there like, I don't want to be here. Why am I here? You know? And, but it just like hurt me to be at home anyway. So I just started to get real empty, like suicidal, and everything just started getting closer and closer to that edge where, where everything was either like, I was going to go into porn or I should sort something out. And what kind of happened, I guess, is like, I took a drug that was, I don't even know, some designer drug one night, and I was so sick, and spent the night, you know, in a toilet, like had a toilet, that whole thing. Mm. And I remember I like begged for my soul to Jesus. I was just like, Jesus, that was probably the first time I thought about Jesus in a long time. So I was like so sick, and I was just pleading to Jesus. I was like, I'm so sorry I left you. I'm so sorry I left you. And I woke up the next day and I told my friends that, and they're like, whoa, that's bizarre. And I just started to think about Jesus after that moment.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
I think a lot of people
have those stories, right?
When you started because I know it's cutting off a little bit. When you started thinking about mm-hmm. Jesus and you told your friends that, was he starting to kind of come into your mind more often? Or was it just like that one night, or he just started, he'd come into your mind, you know, because the Holy Spirit starts like speaking to you.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely did. And well, I had a best friend too that we hadn't talked in a long time, and she was a raver. She was gay. And I had heard that she gave her life to Jesus and she had a kid and she was married. And we were best friends. You know, we didn't leave each other's side for a long time. We had lost touch. I heard that, and I was starting to think about Jesus, and I was like, you know what, we really got to call her up. Her name is Megan Lavender, and she's just such a bright soul. And I was like, let's call her up. And she came over, and I was the lowest I'd been. I was like straight suicidal, and like just the thoughts of things going on and like the warfare around me. Yeah, I was just like, oh, I'm so over it. And so I called her over, and she just had this like light in her eyes, this like purity, and this like her soul was just at peace. And she was like happy. And I saw her baby like crawling around the floor, and was like, oh my gosh, it made me cry. And I couldn't stop thinking about that. And I kind of went through a few more gigs, and I was like, there's nothing here anymore. There's nothing here.
Yeah.
And so one day, I really it was like the day after Christmas, and that Christmas I cried the whole Christmas, and I was like just real bummed out. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to sit down and I'm going to pray. I'm just going to like sit in prayer. Let's try this. It's been a long time. So I sat in prayer and I pretty much just said, Jesus, God. And I'm like, God, can you hear me? Like, hi. And he met me right there. And it felt like every cell in my body was just connected to love, and it was just connected to like what was holy and precious. And it was like, I just surrendered in that moment, and it was just like so beautiful. And I couldn't really fathom why I would ever leave that, why I ever left.
Hold that thought, because we're going to be going back. Yeah. We're going to be going to a break right now. But on the second half, I want to talk to you about what happened during this encounter and then the transformation mm-hmm. process, how God led you, because you're in a crazy place right now. And even though God said, yes, hello, nice to meet you, there's going to be a serious process to come through that a lot of people are dealing with as well that are listening right now.
Yeah.
You guys, we'll be back right after the break. In 2 minutes, I have Jesse in studio. It's going to be epic. Thank you guys for tuning in every week. Don't forget to go to thehootsurvivors.com and get all the past radio shows. We'll talk to you guys.
More of the Ryan Reese Show coming up. Post your questions at Ryan Reese on his Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook. Now, back to the Ryan Reese Show.
All right, I got Jesse in studio. We were talking about her crazy life, growing up in Detroit, growing up as a good kid pretty much, but had a lot of obstacles in her life. Her sister died from cancer at a young age. Her father died of AIDS at, I think she was like 9, single mom, dating a cop that was abusive, just a lot of crazy stuff. And then basically just wiling out. And when I say wiling out, looking for attention, because home life was crazy. Just like a lot of you that are listening now, home life is crazy and you're looking for love in all the wrong places, mm-hmm. basically. And anyway, yeah. She's been a great dancer. It led her to a career, a showgirl in Vegas, doing all kinds of magic shows, dancing at raves, and became like I can't even think of the name of them. Suicide Girls. And really became famous, but then always end up back in the strip club. And then at this last point, she gave her life to God. She was empty, suicidal, depressed. And that's where I want to pick up is here you are. You saw your friend that's a Christian. You just see that purity. You just see the Holy Spirit. You see God in her life, basically. And you want that, and you call out to God. And I want to go back into that moment. So where are you at this point, and what did you say to God, and how did he respond?
Yeah, so I feel like God met me right in my bedroom floor when I was just like, okay, I'm gonna do a prayer, and I'm gonna see if he's listening. And it literally met me right there. It changed my whole life from that moment on. I just felt love, like unconditional love that I was searching for all over the world, searching for this like love, and finally felt like just a peace in my soul, like a rest, like a truth. Just truth. And I was just pleading. I'm like, I'm so sorry I left you, God. I'm so sorry I left you. And I feel like from that moment, I never really had to guess if he was there or like question my faith. It was like, literally he met me in that moment.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I was like, okay, my life needs to change. Like, I need to let the Lord lead, and a lot of things need to change in my life. This is a whole mess. And it was really about putting myself aside and letting him direct, and that it can be so tough, right? It's like a daily surrender.
Okay, well, hey, let's reel it back a little bit, because technically you're dancing at strip clubs, you have an opportunity for doo-doo porn, you're in a drugs, alcohol, depression, all this stuff. What happened immediately? He revealed himself to you, but what was the process? What was your next step? What did you do to become a Christian, or should I say to start walking in the ways of God?
I was discipled by my friend. Yeah. It's like good to get around other Christians and in the Word, like the Bible is the most important thing. So I really started reading my Word, and it brought me right back to that girl in junior high. Like, I was so nerdy. I had my little, gel pens and highlighters, in the Word of God. And so it just brought me back there, where I started to just unravel all the, like, desensitizing of the world and all the anger I had in my heart for my stepdad, and just started to try to, like, practice forgiveness and, like, let that go. So that really drived a lot of the chaos in my life. I was just like, I want to prove it, Yeah, so it was just, he really started working with me on sanctification. Sobriety. So real quickly, I just started going to church all the time, putting Christians, talking to Christians, like stepping away from a lot of my friends. And they were like quite confused. Some were hateful. Some it was weird. That was a weird time. And I think when you're coming to Christ, like that's always a season for new Christians, that it's a bit awkward, right? For family members or for friends that aren't quite that, it's going to take some time. And it's not always graceful. And you just got to
I call that season the identity crisis season.
Yeah, it's hectic. Yeah. You know, and you feel like lonely and kind of it's awkward and whatever, and you gotta like explain. You're not ready for apologetics yet either, and they'll hit you with all the biblical stuff. You're like, I'm not ready. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Just growing in the Lord, so like a baby in Christ. And so he really worked with me on sanctification. And the sobriety, like I just got sober quick. I wanted to like take care of myself, work on like health stuff again. And I had like a year's worth of gigs, because in the strip club, like feature industry, they book like a year ahead, like everything's booked up.
So you're still booked, but you're a Christian now.
All gigs. But I'm a Christian. A Christian stripper. Like, oh, what a mess.
Yeah.
So I had to call. I was like, okay, we need to like sabotage my career here, I guess, you know, like it's like, that's it. So I started calling, called my agents, and one was like, Jess, I'm so proud of you. Like, this is cool. I'm gonna be praying for you and I'm glad you're doing this. Like, it's all right. I have two gigs left that I need you to do and the rest I'll cancel. And it's like, fair. Okay, fair. The other one was like, what are you talking about? This is crazy. He was so mad because they had so many gigs, you know, in contract. They're like, you're going to get sued. And they came down heavy on me. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm just going to give it to God. Like, okay, sue me. Like, yeah. Okay. You know, like, I'm not going to get naked in your club. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So anyway, I had to call like a year's worth of gigs and just say, hi, I gave my life to Jesus, so I'm not going to be at your club. And, like some of them are, I don't, they're like, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand. Like, what are you talking about? They're like, okay.
That would have been a crazy phone call to, I would love to hear the response of people.
A bunch of them. I had to sit there and call. And, I was like, well, this is wild. And I had two more gigs that I had to do. And what was so strange, it was like, one of them, I can't remember where, I think it was like Wyoming or something. And that was like one of the last two. The last one was Vegas, and I'll get to that one. But Wyoming. So I go to this club, and I told the people ahead of time, and they were really cool. They're like, you don't have to get topless. Like, we understand, we're glad you're doing and going down a different road. Like, we support you in that, but we're just going to get through this last one. And like, you don't have to get topless or whatever. And it's like, okay, you know, cool. And the security guard was Christian. And he's like, yeah, I've been thinking about getting out of this for a while. And we like prayed together. And I was like, you know, brother, I pray that you that the Lord leads you. And then this waitress had a miscarriage. She was pregnant. And it was my last show. The last time I was supposed to go on stage at this spot in Wyoming. And it was weird because I was wearing all white and she was bleeding out, you know, TMI. I know you have kids and stuff.
She had a miscarriage in the strip club.
Miscarriage in the strip club.
Oh, dang.
She comes backstage. Her husband's freaking out. She's like, you know, trying to just, you know, find like a center and relax. And like, she's bleeding out. And so I just went over and prayed for her. And I'm just like, you know, like, God's got you in this. And, you know, something wasn't healthy with the baby. You know, like, I'm just praying over her. And I'm like, you are loved. It's okay. You're going to get through this. And we were praying for the husband too. And he started to calm down. It was like such a God moment. It was so wild because the strip club's meant to be sexy and stuff, right? But like backstage, this is going down. And, so I'm just like holding her hand. I'm like, all right. And they're like, are you ready to go on stage now? I was like, yeah, let's go on stage. And she's going out in a stretcher into the ambulance. And then I go on stage and it was just like this quiet show with like a few, 18-year-olds, it was like another two sides of the club was like all nude and whatever, and there's like a bunch of just like 18-year-olds all rowdy, and I'm like 32. I'm just like, what the heck, you know, like, this is dumb.
Yeah.
And so I just did like fire show and whatever, and I was just so unenthusiastic, but these kids were like, bleh! And so it was done, and I was like, ah, you know, it's done. Okay,
one left.
And so that was that one. And and the last one I had to do was in Vegas. And that was really, it gave me so much anxiety because my friends, like all of my like raver buddies and all that kind of stuff, were doing a party upstairs of Hustler Club. And that same night, so they were all like, oh, we can't wait to see your show. And in my mind, I'm like, dude, I want to go to this show and I just want to like it says in my contract, all I have to do is a show in the building. So I could go into the bathroom and I could just, you know, give people hugs and that's my show. I was like, I should just eat cereal and that's my show. Like, I don't care. And they had these like banners of me and stuff. And it was just like this beautiful club. And then my friends are partying upstairs and they're so excited. And like, I didn't want to tell them that they're not going to get like a good show or whatever, you know? But I was just like, I want to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and have this like bulletin that just said like, you know, I just gave my life to Jesus. Do you want a sandwich or like something stupid? Like, like Andy Kaufman style or just like something dumb, you know? So I went to the club and I had the Christian music on my hard drive and I gave Christian it to the music? DJ and he's
Christian music.
Christian music. This is Christian good. Music.
All right.
In the Hustler Club in Vegas. And then I wore all white and I got on stage and I had one of my best friends come who's a former suicide girl too and she's Christian for support because I was scared. Like, I was like, you know what? I just want to. What is the best case scenario in this gig? I was like, I want everybody to leave the strip club. That's the best case scenario.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of a jerk, I guess, for doing that.
Did they play the Christian so music? Like,
so we played the Christian music. and it was like Christian kind of like housey stuff, you know? So it was right. Like, it was Christian. It was gospel. It was gospel. But and I just twirled. It swirled around and I went around to everyone and I like looked them deep in the eye and I like gave them a hug. And I think people actually enjoyed that. Like, it seems like they like hugged me and they're like, oh, this is cool. I just went around the room, gave everyone a hug. And then I went back on stage and, you know, just kind of like twirled around to Christian music. And it was just like not at all the same show I would have done, you know, because I was just twirling until it was over.
So now that you're done, these are the last two shows. Okay. So
yeah.
You're out of contract. What?
Yeah.
Because we have 13 minutes left and I want to make sure. Yeah. No, time flies.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're on the show.
Sorry.
No. It's all good. I think I've never heard a story like that. Actually, that was insane that they even played Christian music.
You just gotta let it go.
And you're in contract. Yeah. You're supposed to go be doing your thing. And you're just like, I'm just going to dress in white and go and hug people and give people high fives. And God, it's almost like God just gave you that grace to.
Yeah.
He gave you that grace to just get out and not have to do anything and literally just dumb down the whole mentality.
And the owner of the club was like, it's cool. Don't even worry about it. Like, I appreciate what you're doing. You know, he was cool about it.
Yeah, that's insane.
I was like, whoa.
That's insane.
And he just let me out of the contract and let me go. And that was it. And so shortly after that, I was like, what do I want to do with my life? I just kind of focused so much on like finding a purpose quickly.
Yeah.
I tried to go to Africa and that just fell flat. I ended up moving into my van and just toured until I could figure out like what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be. I just want to leave Vegas, you know?
Yeah.
And so for a year, I just traveled. I turned my van into a house, traveled around and did that kind of van life. Dope. And that was cool. And then, quickly I got hired into a show back in Vegas and it was like a big, beautiful show and it was supposed to be a family show and it was like doing fire performance. The producers were like Beyonce's producers. It was a big glamorous show and I started doing that again and I was just like, my heart was convicted. So again, I left that, cause I just felt like Vegas pulled me back in when I had tried to leave. And so I ended up in Hookers for Jesus in Annie LaBear's house.
You ended up with Annie LaBear.
Yeah.
No way.
Annie LaBear. Yeah. For 3 months I was in Destiny House and just loved on. They are so good to those girls. And like, they just like, just love on you with the love of Christ and unconditional love. You're away from the world stuff. Like, you surrender your cell phone. And that was like one of the best things that I just needed, that away from social media, away from, you know, you're just, yeah. Reading the Bible, you get biblical homework, you like, you know, Jesus, all the Jesus.
Yeah.
And she is such a mentor to me too, and she's an amazing woman. And so Hookers for Jesus kind of set me up for a bit more success on my walk. I felt like I was just, you know, kind of striding a little better. Ended up in Buffalo. And now I work with a group called Path of Western New York. So similar to what Annie does, Path of Western New York, helps people from sex trafficking and that kind of thing. So I volunteer there. And I really feel drawn towards like helping women from trafficking and sexual abuse and anything like that. So I love that.
That's amazing.
And I do caregiving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like just a person now. It's kind of crazy. Like now I'm just like a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Wow.
And you're
yeah.
You're
I do like in-home caregiving.
Oh, I'm sorry. You do that as well. The home giving. Tell us a little.
Yeah. I do caregiving and like, yeah, like caring for old people, like grandmas and grandpas, quadriplegics, things like that. And it cracks me up sometimes because we'll share stories and I'll tell stories like how glamorous my life, like quote unquote glamorous my life was at one point. And I was like, you know, you deal with like a lot of poop and it's real, like realness. And I love that, but it's just like caring and loving on someone is like just real. And that like is so fulfilling. And God really has put beautiful Christians and people in my life and just fulfilling good stuff. And it's like the simple things that really count now. And like, you don't really have to go to like the craziest rave or the, you know, it's like just really being there with, and like having a cup of coffee with like an elderly person while they tell you stories and forget your name. It's just like, oh, so, you know, your heart just melts. And anyway, so yeah, I've been sober and sanctified 3 years now. What do you call it? Celibate. And God is so good.
Dude,
he's just
amazing.
So good. And I think I'm going to school again for...
Go ahead. Sorry, there's like a little delay. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. I'm going to school soon. I'm still praying on it, but I want to go to school for fire. I want to go to school for EMT and then get into firefighting.
Do it.
So
that would be epic. Like,
yeah, it seems cool.
You can do it. You can do it. I got several friends in that.
Yeah,
in
so you should be a fire performer. Yeah.
So you're into health. So you're into health though too, because my wife. She follows you as well on Instagram. You're in her like health stuff. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's so cool that she's into health stuff and like awesome supplements. I love that. You know, it's cool. Health and fitness. I think fitness is so important. Taking care of ourselves is so important. And, you know, movement, exercise, just motivating people to take better care of themselves is definitely like a calling and something that I think is important, and not to focus so much on, you know, like being fit or like having a six pack, but just to like move, take care of yourself, you know, try to have like, you know, some vegetables in there, or just some, you know, good practices in life that
stretching and exercise and movement. That's the whole thing is a lot of people get sick because they're not, or you get back pains or you're getting different, your muscles are locking up. That's why you're supposed to be stretching, and our muscles are like rubber bands. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm a skater and I'm always, you know, something's always happening to me, my body. So I've learned just to constantly be stretching and moving and shaking. And that keeps, even when you do get hurt, you bounce back quickly, you know, just from that stuff. But yes, people need to
You snowboard too and stuff, right?
I grew up, snowboarding a lot, but I've had a lot of knee surgeries, so I don't want to be connected to anything at this point. I want my skateboard or my surfboard I could like push away if need be. And
gotcha.
To it. But we'll see. My wife might want to bring me out of retirement to snowboard here in the winter. So
woohoo. Or maybe skiing, right? I went snowboarding once and I was like, I don't know, I wasn't sure about it. I was feeling a little too risky. I was like, I'm just gonna take it slow. So I think I might do skiing.
That's hilarious. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, because I'm 35. Yeah. I'm not trying to hurt myself.
So, I know. I know that feeling. So I have a question for you. So I have a question for you. Any last words to people that are listening right now that are in the situation or maybe going through a similar situation as far as maybe the exact situation or a situation where they're just dealing with the anxiety, the depression, hopelessness, being lost, confused, just all the different emotions that you are going through. What would you say to them? You could say a lot of things to them. What would you like to say to them now to encourage them in the place where they're at?
You know, you just can't say it enough to press into God, because all of this stuff is fading away. Like, all these things in the world, like, you can have everything, but it really doesn't have substance or meaning. It's about, you know, like, Jesus will put things into your life that are loving and things that are holy. Like, those things will last, you know. And Jesus, your relationship with Jesus is eternal and forever. And those are the things that you're searching for and longing for. And so the more we really press into him, the more he can heal our hearts, heal our wounds, and just surrendering that and laying it down and really asking him to search your heart where it needs work. Is it unforgiveness? Is it, is there certain things you're repeating in your head that are lies, you know, that you're not good enough, or those things that those people spoke over you that stuck? You just give it to God and stay in the word and like, just get in that Bible. I know it's hard sometimes for Christians even, or like new Christians or whatever, to just open the book and just read it and find someone to disciple you, like a good, strong Christian to pray for you and to keep checking on you. And God just replaces those things in your life. Don't be afraid to like let go of those things that aren't serving you, like porn. You're just like, oh, I can't deal without that. Like, from a person that was like addicted to sexual attention for a while, and like everything was revolved around sex, and for me not to have that for 3 years, and it just becomes easier, and you don't even think about it, and you just are. I don't know. It just brings you closer to God and closer to like the relationships in your life are like more meaningful. And so I just don't be afraid to lose everything that you have because God will replace it with something better.
I liked what you said about just getting someone in your life to help disciple you. You need that person that you can rely on. You need someone that's actually walking the walk and talking the talk, not someone that's saying something but not living that life, because you need someone you could go to and bounce ideas off of and like, okay, well, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm struggling with. Most likely they're like, hey, guess what? I was there and this is what I did. So that's that discipleship, is you need someone solid around you. That's basically the real deal. You know, you don't want to hang out with a poser, a guy that's posing or a woman that's posing to be something. But churches that you will find, they have discipleship programs, they have new believer programs. They have these things set up for new believers to get on your feet. I had the same thing. I had people around me to help me walk through it. It wasn't easy, but it gets easier. Like you said, you know, about even like sleeping around, you're like, it's been 3 years now. Well, I don't even think about it anymore, you know, and that's a long time. You know, someone that has, you know, comes from a life of like the way we lived, you know, I think.
I never thought I'd be able to do that. Praise God.
And that's how you know that God's real.
Yeah.
For real.
Oh, man. I could never do that on my own, ever.
There's no way. But the power of God in us.
Yeah, and it's so good to just talk about what you're going through, too, because when you shed light on it, like, I feel like the enemy, the devil wants you to hide everything, to keep it quiet, and to make you feel like it's, you know, that you need to be ashamed and not tell anyone and keep it a secret. Those are the things where if you're in your mind saying, like, oh, I can't tell this person that's discipling me this thing, or I got to keep this to myself. Usually those are the things that you really need to talk about that the Lord wants to shine some light on and like maybe redirect you. And there's nothing too big that God can't forget, you know? We all deal with real life stuff. You got to just let it out, talk about it.
And I was literally going to just say, and you kind of just said it, you said, we all deal with, you know, real life stuff. Like, you're gonna go through hard times. That's normal. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Don't feel ashamed. Don't isolate yourself. Don't feel like no one understands. Trust me, everybody understands, because everyone's human and we all go through. We all go through it. You know, and we go through different seasons in our life. But God is real, and He will get you through it. And He will continue to transform you and change your heart and mind. So. Any last words? Amen. We have 1 minute and 30 seconds left. Any last words?
I love your show. It's so cool to be on your show. I've watched so many episodes. I really want to meet Christina sometime too. She's really cool. She inspires me. Like, what a cool sister in Christ.
We got it. Are you guys connected on Instagram?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we chat.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay. She's awesome. You guys need to connect for sure. And we want to.
Yeah, I just love what you're doing for the youth, you know?
We want to come out on tour.
Yeah, I need to be the raccoon.
Yes.
Yeah,
we're gonna get you out on a tour soon. And
have you released where yet?
Huh?
Have you released your next date or anything yet? You said it in California.
Not yet. We're waiting till January 1. We have about 4 different invites to different states and even countries. But we're going to wait till January 1st to kind of see what the limitations are. But we're going to start immediately in January in California. So we're going to hit the skate parks. So you're going to have to make a trip out here and come party with us.
Yay!
All right. Well, hey, we got 20 seconds left. So I want to thank you for being on the show. It was awesome. It was encouraging. And, you know, we love you guys. From my family, Crystal, she's been watching what you've been going on your social media. And she thanks you for
the
vitamins and all that. And we love you. So thank you very much.
I love you too. Thank you.
This has been The Ryan Reese Show. To connect and find out more about Ryan, click on ryan-reese.com. Check us out next Saturday at 9 p.m. for The Ryan Reese Show.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? I mean, you are called by God, and aren't we all praying the big prayer, "Here I am, Lord, send me"? So if we put two and two together, you've got a message to deliver, my friend. Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, art to make, or businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. I use my mic like a machete, so if you don't like to get your toes stepped on or pushed off cliffs to finally jump on in with Jesus, I may be too much for you. But if you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform or lifeaudio.com today.